again, medical education podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal. I will apologize in advance because at any given moment you might hear my voice struggling with a cold. It seems like an annual apology that I have to make, but nonetheless, we'll press on. I want to press on in large part because I'm excited about the opportunity to speak with Suzanne Schoot, who works in the Task Force of Assessment in the Department of Education, Development and Research in the Faculty of Health, Medicine and Life Sciences at Maastricht University. And the paper we're going to talk about, as I understand it, is actually the first study in her PhD studies. So a great accomplishment to have conducted and successfully published such work so early. You'll find it in the June 2018 issue of Medical Education, and the title is Stakes in the Eye of the Beholder, an International Study of Learners' Perceptions Within Programmatic Assessment. Thanks, Suzanne, for making the time to chat.
Well, thanks. I'm very honored and happy to be here.
You've just returned from the Netherlands after enjoying the Ottawa conference, and it's fitting with your focus and interest in assessment, obviously. As I understand it from our very brief conversations, your PhD is focusing predominantly on the role of assessment in learning. Do you mind saying a bit to get us started in terms of the overall plan or focus for the phenomenon you're trying to address?
Well, we all read the phrase assessment drives learning, right? And programmatic assessment is one of the models that has the ambition to use this learning potential of assessment. And it also has my personal interest to use assessment for learning instead of just the summative aspects of assessment, because my personal interest is more in learning and facilitating learning or stimulating learning. So to use assessment as an entry point for that ambition, I think that's the main thing I want to accomplish with this PhD project. To understand that process and the mechanisms underneath it better. And the context in which we do that is the model that's called programmatic assessment, which is also a very, I would say, rapidly emerging approach in medical education. It's been used a lot. We'll talk about it a lot, just as you referred to the Ottawa. It was one of the big topics and discussions there as well. And it sounds very appealing, I think, for a lot of people. But how it really works and how learners within these models respond and perceive the things we try to do, there are still a lot of things we don't understand.
Yeah, and it is absolutely something that seems to be coming up more and more often, both in the literature, but also with many schools trying to adopt programmatic assessment.
Yeah.
Still, I anticipate it's a term that many of our listeners won't reflexively understand. What defines programmatic assessment in your hands?
Well, first of all, it's a model for which you can use as a framework or an approach for designing assessment programs, or actually a whole curriculum. And an important principle is that it proposes a continuum of stakes instead of the formative versus summative discussion in assessment that states that assessments either has a formative or a summative purpose. To overcome that debate, it proposes more of a continuum of stakes ranging from low-stake assessment to high-stake assessment. And in that sense, every assessment has a formative and a summative component in it. And each individual assessment itself is more intended for learning, which is then the low-stake assessments. So that means that there are no too little consequences based on the evaluation. Two high-stakes decisions where you use a lot of these low-stake assessments to aggregate all the information and make a summative pass-fail or progress decision on a learner. And that's an important principle in which we try to focus our research.
Yeah, I think it's an important principle for a number of reasons, one of which I don't know who to attribute this to, but that the assessment itself doesn't know what it is. So we talk about them as being formative or summative, but of course the exact same experience can be treated very different ways by the people involved.
Yeah.
So what were some of the early indicators that had you thinking that it was important to ask students about their experience in these sorts of contexts?
Well, actually, there were two important articles, and one of them is from my own promotion team, from Sylvia Heinemann, and they reported mismatches between these intentions we have when designing and implementing such a program and the perceptions of learners who seem to perceive every assessment as a high-stakes summative assessment, raising the question, what do these stakes mean to learners? How do they perceive low-stake assessments, and can they actually exist, or is every assessment a high-stake experience for a learner? And that was actually the starting point of our project as well, to first define and understand the stakes of assessment from the perception or the experience of the learner themselves.
And we're not going to have time to go into great methodological detail, but it's worth highlighting that you ran a constructivist grounded theory study interviewing a variety of learners. I'll ask you to speak specifically about your decision to make this an international study and get learners' perceptions across a variety of programs.
Yeah.
What was the main advantage of doing that, in your impression, as opposed to getting a larger sample from an individual program of assessment?
Yeah, okay, so we tried to sample in such a way that we had some variation in implementations to really understand like the overall, maybe universal working mechanisms underneath it. So we looked for programs, curricula that implemented programmatic assessment over a longer period, so that implementation issues that maybe are always at play, but they were as minimum as possible. And we expected the learner's experience with and assessments of the stakes involved would vary within their level of training and the process or the time they need to adjust to the different learning communities. So we purposefully selected from undergraduate medical training to postgraduate medical training, so the residency programs, to see if there were certain mechanisms underlying for every learner, or that could be maybe training phase specific. Also, because it's a very cultural question, what stakes and consequences mean, we try to go beyond the walls of our own institute and look for different programs. So we sampled not only within phases of medical training, but also from Maastricht context, but we also included the North American context, so Canada and America.
Yeah, and despite those cultural and program variabilities, it seemed as though there were still some cohesive themes that came out, one of which seemed dominant was the sense of control. I think it goes back to what I was saying earlier about how the assessment itself doesn't control what it is, but rather the learner's perceptions of what an assessment does or can do. It seems to be driven largely by what the learners themselves feel control over. Can you elaborate on that in terms of the key details?
Yeah, so that's what we saw in all the settings. First of all, they did recognize that consequences was a big part of the definition of stakes. So assessment, they come with consequences or they don't. You know, we had a lot of phrases like it doesn't count, so I don't care, or nobody cares, versus it counts, you know, so that was quite universal. But then the continuum of stakes, that was much more complex. But in all the settings, the room or experience of control learners perceived, you know, to make choices and to act upon that, that was really more related to the stakes than those pass-fail decisions we lay upon the learners. And that was for all the settings, that was true, and also within all phases. And the level of control they perceive or can handle, that does vary. So there were also some personal aspects, whether or not they acted upon this perception of control, that varied. But that was very much related to their perceptions of stakes.
So when you say the degree to which the control they perceived influences their perception of the stakes or its value as a learning opportunity, what does control mean? Is it control over whether or not they have to do it? Or was it control over the way in which they engaged with it? Was it control over the learning activities that they took on afterwards?
Yeah, we called it like several program design factors in which learners experience the level of control. And that basically came down to their opportunities to influence outcome, at least in their perception, to collect evidence and the opportunities they had to show improvement and to improve himself. So for the first one, the opportunities to influence outcomes, it was very much related in case of making progress in generic competencies like communication or collaboration, a lot of perceptions of what the requirements of such competence should be. And they experienced that they could influence what professionalism or communication should be, you know, that they had something to say about what is competent in this field, that there was some sort of negotiation between that. So oral exams, for example, as well, you know, to interact with the assessment task and the assessor, that gave them a feeling they were less dependent on the content and quality of an assessment as in a standardized test, for example, which they just had to wait and see what was asked of them and hoped the answer that they had in their head was part of the alternatives, you know? So that kind of control really influenced the stakes they perceived in the assessment experience. Then, like I said, the opportunity to interact with the assessor as well, you know, there was room to show everything they learned during a more of a dialogue than just the questions that were asked in a standardized test, for example. On the other hand, interaction with an assessor also raised the stakes in several ways because it came with the chances of losing face. You know, you really had to sit across somebody. And for some learners, that's quite an intimidating experience, especially if it's the first time or if it's somebody they value a lot. It has two sides, this interaction opportunity. The other one is the opportunity to collect evidence. You know, there were programs that set a lot of demands on what types of evidence they collected to show their progress. And that was all decided by the programs. For example, you need to collect 8 mini CEXs over these 2 weeks, or you need to show all the assessment tasks that were provided by the program. You need to take them in your portfolio. And other programs let learners more decide for themselves what kind of evidence they would like to present in their portfolios to show strengths and weaknesses. So these kinds of choices learners could make really influence the stakes of each individual assessment. Is it automatically in a portfolio, or did they have some decisions in whether or not it was seen by anybody? The last one I mentioned was the opportunities to improve. You know, for some implementations, remediation came besides the already busy schedules. So it was something that was extra, and that really felt as an overload and something you would want to avoid. Though when it was remediation was something everybody was doing constantly, it is much more part of the learning program for everybody, and then it's not an overload they want to avoid, and the stakes were different then.
And that suggests a bit of a complex environment that understandably is going to require some more work to tease apart. So this is probably an unfair question given that this is your first study in your PhD, but given what you've seen so far, what advice do you have for educators who are hoping to use programmatic assessment in terms of positioning it so that learners can take advantage of the principles that it's meant to enable?
Well, we really need to think about what is our assumption of assessment, I think. And if you really want assessment to stimulate learning, which is an assumption, you know, we don't all want to do that with assessment. But if it is something you want to do, you need to think about what is in it for the learner. And if we want to stimulate self-regulated learning, which is one of the ambitions with this model, we have to give them the opportunity, and I think trust is an important word here as well, to indeed regulate their own learning. And that means in the context of assessment that learners should be able to have something to say about how and when and why something is assessed. And that's a very different way of looking at assessment, I think, that program designers tend to do normally, you know, because it's not so much about our responsibility in certifications of learners, but more in the learner's interest, you know, to find their strengths and weaknesses and build upon that, which is a different way, I think. So to come back to your question, what do medical educators need to do? I think trust is an important word here. And we need to take into account the level of support a learner needs with that, because that's one thing the study showed us, that for undergraduate students, they need more support and direction in this assessment experience than, for example, a resident needs.
Right, and we'll direct listeners to the paper for a bit more detail and to get a more elaborated version of that. But I'll take the time now to thank you, Suzanne, for offering such a good summary, and thrilled to hear that this is the first step along a longer path for you. And we'll look forward to seeing how your PhD evolves.
Yeah, we still have plenty to do. So yeah, room for a lot of additional studies for this topic, I think.
I wouldn't want it any other way for you. For the listeners, again, just as a reminder, we've been speaking about a paper called Stakes in the Eye of the Beholder, an international study of learners' perceptions within programmatic assessment. You'll find it in the June 2018 issue of Medical Education. And the voice you've been hearing other than mine is Suzanne Schutz, the first author on that work. Congratulations again, Suzanne. Best of luck.
Thank you so much, Kevin, for having me and giving me the opportunity to talk about our work.